Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. Tonight we're discussing the future of the Republican Party in California. On Election Day last week, while much of the nation embraced a Trump presidency, California went in a different direction. The state's voters decisively rejected Trump by 2-1 margins. Counties were blue not just in wealthy coastal cities, but throughout the state, including inland and mountain counties. Even Orange County in Southern California went Democratic after voting Republican every presidential cycle since 1936. Voters here also furthered a progressive agenda, approving initiatives to legalize recreational marijuana, maintain a ban on plastic bags, and advance gun control by restricting ammunition sales. They sent Democrat Kamala Harris to the United States Senate and increased the number of Democrats in the state legislature to near supermajority, or two-thirds numbers. Locally, voters up and down the state approved numerous progressive initiatives, from transit improvements to housing the homeless. In short, the election results here in California were night and day from the national scene. Yet California hasn't always been the Democratic stronghold that it is now. In fact, between 1952 and 1988, Republican candidates won our state in nearly every presidential election. But clearly, things have changed, and dramatically so. According to the Public Policy Institute of California, the percentage of registered voters who identify themselves as Republicans continues to drop, and a recent poll found that less than 1 in 4 Californians now view the Republican Party positively. Even more alarming for the GOP, two-thirds or more of California's growing subgroups of voters, including Latinos, millennials, independents, women, and middle-class voters, also have an unfavorable view of the party. So tonight we ask, how did this big shift happen to turn Californians away from the Republican Party? How will the Republican Party plan to win back California voters in our increasingly diverse state? How did this year's election impact their party and state politics more generally? And what is the future of the GOP here in California, and could that future provide lessons for the national party? So joining me to answer these questions and more by phone is Jimmy Camp, the former director of operations of the California Republican Party and founding board member of the Young Republican Federation of California. He's currently a partner at Silver Street Connect, a full-service political consulting firm, and contributes to publications including The Guardian. Jimmy has recently made headlines for leaving the GOP, registering as declined to vote. Welcome, Jimmy. And I think Jimmy's there. And we also have Marco Smolitsis, the founder and publisher of Daily Kos, the largest progressive community blog in the U.S. Marcos is a co-author of the book Crashing the Gate, Netroots, Grassroots, and the Rise of People-Powered Politics, and also author of Taking on the System, Rules for Radical Change in a Digital Era. He's a contributing columnist to Newsweek magazine and a weekly columnist at The Hill newspaper. Welcome, Marcos. Looks like we don't quite have Marcos. And I want to also introduce our final guest, who's joining us by phone, Harmeet Dhillon, who's California's Republican National Committee woman.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, welcome to City Visions. All these guests are by phone, so we want to make sure that we've got the connection there. The final guest that I want to introduce by phone is Harmeet Dhillon, who's California's Republican National Committee woman and the former head of the San Francisco Republican Party. Harmeet is a partner at and the founder of Dhillon Law Group here in San Francisco. Welcome, Harmeet.
Happy to be here, Ethan.
Great. Well, glad you can be there. And it sounds like we've also got Jimmy and Marcos, so I want to welcome you two. And Marcos, why don't we begin with you? Can you give us a little background on the current state of the Republican Party in California and how they got there?
Well, it is clearly in deep difficulty. I was just actually checking during the intro, checking the final results, and only Hawaii, I believe, was more Democratic than California, and only marginally so. And the reasons are really obvious. I mean, it's because California is leading the nation in demographic changes. It is leading the nation in the creative class, in technology, in entertainment, in the kind of people that work in creative class type industries. And what that means is this is a very liberal-leaning sort of glimpse into the future of what America is going to be in the coming years ahead.
Mm-hmm. And Marcos, just staying with you, how did it get to this point? What were the factors that led to the Republican Party here in California being in such a minority state?
Well, I mean, it is the utter rejection and systemic rejection of people of color, of Latinos, African-Americans, of gay, bisexual, lesbian, transgender, groups that the Republican Party has deemed to be sort of un-American, othered, and not part of the American coalition. And California is sending a message that this is exactly what America is. And maybe the rest of the country has to catch up, but right now California is sort of leading that way. But really, Trumpism sort of solidified that trend towards a Republican Party that is very male, white, Southern-centric. And it paid dividends for them. Obviously, Trump won the election. But again, that's borrowed time because the nation's demographic changes as seen in California are heading towards what California is today, not what, say, Michigan or Wisconsin is. So clearly, if Republicans can figure out California, they have a future nationwide. If they don't, then they don't.
Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Camp, you've recently left the GOP. I'd love to hear your take on this history. How did we get to this point with the Republican Party in California that they have such a difficult time getting past even that one-third minority status threshold, at least in the legislature?
Well, once again, thanks for having me. I appreciate being here. You know, I think it's an accumulation of things. If you go back to 1994, which was 22 years ago, we re-elected a Republican governor, Pete Wilson. He won by 15% of the vote. Republicans took a majority for the first time in, I believe, 87 years in the state assembly. We had Republican, I shouldn't say we anymore, that's a hard habit to break, but Republicans had 4 out of 6 of the statewide offices. So in 1994, Republicans were doing very, very well. Coincidentally, that year, there was an initiative on the ballot called Proposition 187 that was seen by many in California as being anti-Latino. You know, as far as funding for schools, funding for programs for Latinos in California, it was a very anti-Latino measure. However, it passed that year. And I think that was the beginning of the downfall. Part of it included changing demographics. I blame a lot of it on the primary system, the way it worked in California. Although I'm not a big fan of the open primary now, it didn't seem to change much. But in order for a Republican to get elected amongst primary voters in California for many years, they had to be the most conservative. And it was the same on the other side of the aisle with the Democrats as well. So I think we saw a more conservative move within our elected officials across the line over the years, which alienated a changing demographic in California. And I think it all has very slowly changed. Back in 1994, the registration was 47% Democrat and 39% Republican. There was only an 8-point gap there. Now it's 59% Democrat and 24% Republican. We've seen a huge shift.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to Harmeet Dhillon. You are the one person on this panel who is actually a member of the Republican Party. Who is the Republican base now in California, and how does that compare to the typical Republican nationwide?
Well, thanks for having me. And, you know, in terms of me being the only one, we're definitely hopeful of getting Jimmy back into the fold here. You know, he was a great consultant in our party and hope to have him back. But in terms of generalizing about who the Republicans are, I mean, this is a really big state, so that's one thing. A lot of the Republicans in California are actually like Republicans in other states, like the much-derided Southern Republicans. You know, they're like farmers, landowners, people who live in rural communities, people who are struggling with employment, people who have seen jobs go away from their counties. And so those Republicans are like people in every other state who vote Republican. And then you have people living along the coast, like here in San Francisco where I live, or in Los Angeles County, and even increasingly in Orange County. And those urban Republicans are different. They're more liberal typically. They are more likely to share some of the social values of Democrats. And, you know, they're still fiscal conservatives typically. So, you know, that's the breakdown here in California. And, you know, one of the interesting things we're seeing here in California is as the state gets more liberal in Sacramento, the Republicans from all over the state who have jobs or businesses are picking up and relocating to other states. And so that is having a kind of a spiraling effect in the sense that, you know, Republicans aren't coming into the state and those numbers are being deterred by the anti-business and other kind of social engineering policies out of Sacramento. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And every day I have friends who are dejected with the state of their ability to grow and build families and have good educations and futures here in a California that is increasingly, you know, sanctuary cities and more taxes on people above a quarter million in revenue and, you know, the bullet train and all kinds of other nonsense that Republicans don't buy into. And they're just picking up and going to Texas, Nevada, Arizona, Florida, other states like that.
I'm curious if you would agree then with Marcos and Jimmy's assessment, not that they said the exact same thing, that the party has alienated wide swaths of the demographics here in California because of its policies such as Prop 187. Would you agree that that characterization is fair?
I think that's a little too simplistic. Prop 187 is, we have a lot of young voters in California. Many of them would give you a blank, vacant stare if you told them, you know, ask them what is Prop 187. That's not really, you know, a sufficient answer. I think there's just a number of different things. For one thing, you know, success breeds success, and the party in the, you know, in control in Sacramento has the ability to hand out a lot of goodies, and, you know, those beget votes. I think if we had been able to break the stranglehold of public sector unions on funding in our state in terms of their ability to raise money and then spend that in massive amounts on Democratic candidates, and that would have helped us out here in California. But we didn't get to this position that we are overnight, Ethan, and we're not going to be able to turn it around overnight either. But the party is doing several things to try to address those perceptions, including running and getting elected a number of minority and women candidates up and down the state, both in legislative as well as in local races.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've already got a question from the viewers on this subject that I wanted to pass along to Jimmy Camp. Question by email from David in San Francisco, wondering if redistricting in California has helped the GOP as much as it seems to have had in other states. And I assume he's referring to some of the gerrymandering that we've seen. So, Jimmy, I wanted to throw that question to you since it's on this topic.
I mean, we did see in 2000 and 2010 some shifts. I think in 2000 it hurt us more than it hurt Republicans more than it helped. I think in 2010 we had more fair districts that were drawn, and then in this election right after that, Republicans were able to pick up in every targeted seat, the highly targeted seats for the state assembly and the Senate. And even a special election in the Central Valley after redistricting, Republicans took out Democrat incumbents in three of those assembly seats. And then in the state Senate seat in the Central Valley with Andy Vidak, it's the highest Latino district in the state. Andy Vidak is a very white farmer who was running against a Latina in that district, and he won. So I think in 2000 it hurt Republicans for a decade. However, in 2002 in 2010 the redistricting actually was much more fair. Unfortunately, this year with Trump on the ballot, we lost all those seats back. Not all of them. Two of those assembly seats back to go back into a super minority there.
Mm-hmm. And I should say that if others want to call in or email in with questions, we definitely invite you to join this conversation. So you can dial 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So Marcos Melitzis, I wanted to ask you your take on what challenges the GOP is facing here in California as it's trying to rebuild. What's going to be the impact of all those demographic changes and the Trump presidency, everything to get the GOP back into a position of competitiveness here in California?
Yeah, I mean, one of the factors is obviously that Latino gap. I mean, one of the so far underreported stories about this election cycle is what happened in Texas and Arizona, two states that demographically are not far behind from California. Now, Texas was a single-digit state. Mitt Romney won it by 17 points. Donald Trump won it by 9, despite getting that massive outpouring of white working-class support. Arizona is a 3-point state now. These are states that have lagged because the Latino population in those states haven't been as active as California Latinos, and that's changing. So unless the Republican Party finds a way to better appeal to Latinos, it's going to suffer the fate. What's happening in California now is going to be happening in Arizona and Texas. And those states go, I mean, path for a Republican to win in the White House isn't that great. Now, furthermore, there's this, we just heard about all these companies that are fleeing California. I mean, just in general, that is incredibly false. I mean, right now, California is, 12% of the population nationwide. About 20% of the public companies are stationed here. This is the incubator of the great new technologies of the future, the Apples and the Googles. So the idea that we're fleeing the state is patently absurd. So we need a Republican Party here, or we don't. The Republican Party here needs to be more attuned to the reality of the state as opposed to trying to create their own reality.
Mm-hmm. And that leads me to Harmeet. Harmeet, I'm interested in your response to that, but also to know if you think that the California GOP is different from the National Republican Party, especially given what Marcos just described as the different demographics here in the state versus nationwide.
Well, I think we're sensitive to those issues, and actually we have done a lot under our current chairman, Jim Roelke, to try to really invest in data, which is something that the Democrats have definitely done better than us over the years, and make sure that as we're canvassing throughout the state, we're entering everything that we're learning about voters into our database. In fact, our data was better in 2014 than the federal data that we got from the RNC. So we are sensitive to the shifting demographics very much, and we're trying to anticipate that by making sure that we recruit, identify, and run candidates who represent the different communities. I mean, you can't run the same candidate in, suburban Bay Area as you would in Koreatown neighborhood or in parts of Orange County that have a large Vietnamese population. So these are things that we're looking at and sensitive to, but a lot comes down to the candidate. Do you have a great candidate? Does that candidate have a network? Does that candidate have the ability to reach across racial divides and economic divides and, be the candidate for that community, not just a specific racial minority? Mm-hmm. And so, these are challenges that absolutely, as Marco said, we are facing all across America. We're facing them here quite starkly in California, but the demographics do keep shifting. And, one thing we found, for example, in 2014 is that, some of the Asian community, a lot of whom are supporting our candidates, a lot of whom are supporting the other side, they seem all to be very motivated more than other communities by education and by access to high-quality higher education. So we're also trying to identify those issues that matter to different communities and then highlighting those in races where we can help them, we can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. And to you, Jimmy Camp, on this question of the sort of how the party is going to rebuild itself and the branding, I'm particularly interested in your take because you left the party, it sounds like because of Trump to some extent, although correct me if I'm wrong on that. Interested in how you think the Trump presidency is going to affect this job here in California for the Republican Party to rebuild itself.
Well, I think in order for the Republican Party to rebuild itself, first off, before we even start talking about reaching out to non-traditional Republican voters, that we need to talk about repairing and sort of inner healing of the party. The day after the election, one of Trump's prime surrogates, someone that will probably play a very relevant role in his White House, Newt Gingrich, said that Never Trump Republicans are whining, sniveling, negative cowards, and that let the Never Trump movement drift off into the ash bin of history. To me, that's not a very good way to try and heal. It gave me no reason to want to come back to the Republican Party when one of Donald Trump's inner circle is calling me a whining, sniveling, negative coward. Omarosa Manigault, who's one of Trump's leading surrogates as well from The Apprentice, basically said that they're keeping a list. That they've got a list, they have a long memory. Part of his inner campaign circle was also in the paper last week talking about how consultants that were Never Trump are not going to get contracts anymore. Well, I have to tell you, on a personal level, I felt that this year already, before the primary.
So it sounds like a kumbaya moment is going to be needed then within the party before it can look outwards.
There is, and I do want to stress, also say one other thing, and I'm not just saying this to kiss up to one of the other people on the phone here, but when I left the party the night before Donald Trump became the nominee, I sent an email out to about 100 of my close sort of personal political allies, elected officials, consultants, and party leaders. The only person that reached back out to me and said, "Hey, I'm really sorry to hear this. I understand where you're coming from. I want to stay friends, and I hope someday we can get you back, was Harmeet Dhillon. So in order for the party to repair itself, they need to take the kind of attitude that Harmeet has, not the kind of attitude that Newt Gingrich has.
Mm-hmm. So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing the future of the California Republican Party with Marcos Melitzis, founder and publisher of Daily Kos, Jimmy Camp, former director of operations of the California Republican Party and political consultant, and Harmeet Dhillon, Republican National Committee woman. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. Are you currently a Republican in California? What GOP policies appeal to you? Did you identify with the Republican Party in the past? What would bring you back now? And how can the party win your vote in 2018 or just in the years ahead? How do you feel about a Trump presidency and its potential impact on California? What positions are you most excited or concerned about? The number to call to join this conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment on kalw.org, or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So, Harmeet, you don't exactly fit the stereotype of a typical Republican here in California. So what issues attracted you to the party, and what's specifically been your response to Trump's rhetoric in this year's election, particularly against women and Muslims and other groups?
So I'm a first-generation immigrant. I was born in India, and I was raised in rural North Carolina, where, you know, in the 1970s, there were signs around my town saying that the Ku Klux Klan welcomes you to Smithfield, North Carolina. So, you know, when I see all this, hysterical overreaction on TV for the last few days of young people, I think I grew up in Klan country, and it was actually just fine. It was actually the Democrats who were the Klan people, not the Republicans. And the Republicans were the ones who were in favor of desegregation of the schools in the South. And, you know, these are the reasons why my parents became Republicans when they were able to register to vote. And that's the intellectual tradition in which I was raised. And so I've been a Republican in college and law school and throughout my career. I moved to California in 2016. And, you know, it's a very diverse, welcoming place for people of all backgrounds. And frankly, rising through the ranks in the party as a volunteer, standing outside, registering voters, to becoming a member of the county governance, to becoming vice chairman of the state party, to becoming the national committee woman, I really haven't felt that my background has been a deterrent to accomplishing what I wanted to accomplish any more so than it is a background in business or in other spheres of life, and to a certain degree less so. You know, I think the party is actually very welcoming.
But have you been concerned about the rhetoric? Do you take Trump literally and the comments that he's made in the campaign to date?
Okay, so that's skipping forward to the second half of your question. Yes, and certainly there are things that Mr. Trump has said at the beginning of his campaign, particularly, that I didn't like. And there were 17 candidates at the beginning of this race, and, you know, most of them were more mainstream people who'd run for office. All of them, in fact, had run for office before and were select politicians and had kind of known how to conduct themselves in the social rhetoric politically. And I think our president-elect evolved throughout the election cycle and addressed some of those issues, and I think he improved significantly. And I'm certainly willing to give him a chance. But I'm not a zero-sum game or single-issue voter. I think we have to really look at all of the aspects, and frankly, there's so much at stake for this country in this election, with Obamacare, with the courts, with extreme regulatory burdens on Americans, that I was willing to kind of look at the big picture and figure out, of the two candidates before me, which was the better one to carry forward my vision, and so I voted for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Camp, I'd like to ask you a little bit about your background, too, since you did make headlines for, as a former director of operations of the California Republican Party and now deciding to leave the party this year. Can you tell us what influenced your decision to make that big move to leave the party that I'm sure you're not only personally identified with, but, you know, obviously professionally identified with, too?
Yeah, I started working in Republican politics in 1988. I was a kid. 24 years old, I started at $5 an hour knocking on doors. That's how I got involved in Republican politics. I had some very good mentors along the way. that brought me in, and I've worked on several statewide campaigns for governor, for U.S. Senate, and then worked for the party. I've worked for the party for years, and then in the last few years, I've been a consultant on my own with my business partner in a company called Silver Street Connect. So that's how I first became involved. The reason I became uninvolved was because of Donald Trump. I didn't feel that he shared my values. I didn't feel that he was the kind of candidate that I could defend. That when people I'm also a writer. My wife's a journalist. Half of my friends are journalists. They read the Daily Kos. My other half of my friends are conservative Republicans that read Breitbart. So I'm right in the middle of both sides of everything going on. There's no way I could defend Donald Trump or my party with him as the leader of the party, as the nominee of the party. And it's well documented. I don't need to sit here and bash Donald Trump particularly. We all know who Donald Trump is. We all know the things that he's said. Many of those things he's backed off on, which I'm pleased to see. However, to me, that goes once again to integrity of saying what I think I need to say to get people elected. His two biggest rallying cries, were lock her up and build the wall. Well, he's backed off of both of those. I don't know how that makes his minority of core support that he had in the primaries. You know, up until Wyoming, when everyone dropped out, 70% of Republican voters in this country wanted someone else than Donald Trump. He had a very small 30% of people that were angry. They were, and many of them righteously so. Some of them, I believe, had deep-rooted issues with race and immigrants. Not all of them, but some of them. I don't think that Donald Trump voters are bad, evil, racist people. I think that some of them are, just like in any party, there are some bad people. But I could not stand by and call myself a Republican when this man was at the head of the ticket.
Mm-hmm. So let's go to the phone lines. We've got Bill from Mill Valley. Bill, welcome to City Visions.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. Let me turn my... off. Thank you. I'd like to just kind of make a couple points. You know, it's terrific that Republicans are splitting off. Can I make my own statement?
Well, we'd really love to hear a question if you have a question for the panel.
Oh, a question specifically. I do want to say it's great that Republicans are splitting off from the party. It's clear it doesn't meet their we have an unqualified, basically an unqualified you know, president-elect now, and that's going to need to be dealt with. But why heal the party when clearly the time of duopoly is over? We need to support a multi-party, state-supported, election entirely. Mm-hmm.
That's a great question around third parties. We have to have this two-party system. Marcos Melitzas, I'd be interested to hear your take on that. Do you think that we should be locked into this two-party system? Do you see a role for third parties and to sort of address the challenges we have in this state, in this country?
No, there's no real role for a third party. Just by the way, our constitutional system set up as first past the post. So. I know some people want that. But, you know, when people really talk about third parties, they're thinking about the party that agrees with everything that they agree with. And there cannot be 75 or 300 million parties to represent each one's beliefs. So you have to really sort of make this decision of two major parties really support your beliefs. And then what you can do is what the Republicans say, the Tea Party crowd, you take over the party. If the mainstream of that party does not agree with where you stand, you have an opportunity to take over a major political party, just like the sort of like Bernie Sanders crowd is trying to do right now with the Democratic Party. I mean, that's how you function in this American system, for better, for worse. I'm not saying it's the best way to do it. It's just a reality of our current political sort of structure.
Mm-hmm. So thank you, Bill, for that question. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we are discussing the future of the California Republican Party. We have Harmeet Dhillon, Republican National Committeewoman, Jimmy Camp, former Director of Operations of the California Republican Party, and Marcos Melitzas, founder and publisher of Daily Kos. So we want you to call in and ask the panel your questions or send us your comments. The number to call to join the conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on kalw.org or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Ruth Ann from El Cerrito. Ruth Ann, welcome back to City Visions.
Yeah, hi there. My question is, and I don't know if any of the panelists have read of or heard, he was a guest on KALW, but David Bailey wrote a book specifically addressing the strategy of Republicans in state legislatures, particularly down ballot races, that every 10 years after the census of redistricting and gerrymandering such a way so that they would prevail in those down-ticket races. And it was enormously successful across the country and in California. And I don't know if any of you have read of or heard of the book that David Bailey wrote concerning this.
So since we're all joining by phone, I don't see any heads nodding, but I wanted to maybe pass this over to Harmeet Dhillon. Harmeet, if you're familiar with this book or have thoughts about the general issue that it sounds like this author was raising.
Yeah, you know, I had a hard time hearing that question, but I did not read that specific book, so I don't have anything to add on insights on that.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose I should give Jimmy Camp a chance to see if he's familiar with the book or has thoughts about the issue.
No, I'm not familiar with the book. I sort of gave an answer to what I thought of redistricting earlier, so I won't repeat that.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, thank you, Ruth Ann, for your question. I want to go back to Marcos. Marcos, I had asked Harmeet and Jimmy sort of their backgrounds of being, you know, in the Republican Party. Of course, Jimmy has recently left it. But I think it points to some of this factionalism that we see in the party. And it would seem like, you know, when Trump was slated to lose, as the polls had him leading up to the election last week, that there was a sense that the Republican Party was going to crack apart into its different factions. Do you still see that as an issue, and particularly here in California? Are those factions here in the same extent that they are nationwide?
The underlying problems, central problems of the Republican Party remain unaddressed. And obviously, Donald Trump's president, that helped unite the party in the short term. But the fact is that the Republican Party is split into three major factions. You have the establishment business Republicans, you have the Christian coalition types, and then you have the Tea Party anti-government types. And Donald Trump really rode the wave of the Tea Party crowd with a heavy dose of Christian coalition types. And it was a coalition that worked. I think maybe a Ted Cruz can recreate that coalition. Very few other people can. And in California, I mean, there's, you know, the other guests would probably be better equipped to talk about specifically what those numbers may look like in California, but I don't think it's much different. I think that the old school, traditional, more establishmentarian Republicans are fading away. They're switching parties. I mean, they're the types of people that used to dominate Orange County, and I still cannot believe that Orange County is colored blue right now, particularly given the underlying current and trends of this election nationwide. I would have thought that would have reasserted itself fairly solidly red, and instead it went the other way. So those divisions remain. They're papered over right now. They have the White House. They have Congress. But, you know, what's going to happen is that they're going to face the same thing every first-term president does in his first midterm. And going back to that last caller, the reason that Republicans did so well is because they were able to capture a lot of governorships back in 2010 midterms. And this is going to be the midterms. It's going to put a lot of the governorships in a lot of those states that have heavy Republican gerrymanders, like Ohio and Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida, and there's going to be headwinds in the face of Republicans. So it seems really right now that Democrats are the ones that are splintered and Republicans are unified. But it felt exactly the same way in 2008 when Obama first won. And things change around very, very quickly. And there's nothing to suggest that Donald Trump is going to be able to evade those And in fact, I think given his personality, he may exacerbate them.
It certainly seems like these things do go in cycles, and I know Democrats now seem to be aiming for 2020 for the same reason that it did give the Republicans so much success in 2010 at the state level and to be able to redistrict. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Carol from San Francisco. Carol, thank you for calling into City Visions.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much for the time. I'm just wondering, given that California has a very different demographic than most of the rest of the country, should the California Republicans consider sort of separating their platform from what is more of a national platform to really address the needs and the desires of the local population? And I mean that in the sense that I think continuing with a more national platform that has oftentimes a southern aspect or an evangelical aspect, or et cetera, on various issues, the California Republicans are setting themselves up to lose consistently over the next X number of years as a younger population is maturing and becoming a voting population.
So I think that's a great question for Harmeet Dhillon, a Republican National Committee woman. Harmeet, what's your response to that question?
So it's a good question about the platforms. You know, in my personal opinion, as a longtime party activist, is that the platform is something that activists and delegates to the party care deeply about and voters don't care about, quite frankly, because nobody goes and looks at the platform before they pull the lever or fill out the forms. You know, our national party platform is definitely a little more conservative on all the social issues. It's a lot longer. It's like an 80-plus page document. I don't think that's, you know, very effective, frankly. And our state party platform actually has evolved over time. You know, certainly there was a big news around the fact that some anti-gay or non-friendly sort of rhetoric on that issue was removed from the platform when we passed our platform within the last four. And so the party is sensitive to that. I mean, frankly, Donald Trump has made some quantum leaps in that regard, to the point of, with regard to the fractures that occurred, as Jimmy's pointed out, during the election cycle. I think he's bent over backwards in the last few days to make sure that he's appointing top leaders from all the different walks of life in the party to top positions in his administration and talking about people at the RNC as well. I mean, he had Peter Thiel address our national convention, prominent gay Silicon Valley billionaire who's going to have a position in the administration. I did a prayer in Punjabi on prime time to kick off the day of his nomination, the second day of the convention. And so, you know, these are definitely non-traditional choices amongst Republicans, and Donald Trump is probably the most gay-friendly national leader we've had in the party ever. So I think we are making some positive strides.
Of course, as vice president, I know, is on the record as favoring conversion therapy for gays. So I know there are some people who might disagree with you on that. We have an email from Susan who asks, what about the role of the media in politics now? Is there any unbiased media? And is the media still responsible for giving an unbiased, accurate account of the news? Jimmy Camp, why don't I start with you on that question? I think that's a really important topic. So what's your take on the role of the media?
Well, that's a great question. What we've seen over the last three decades is what I call a segregation of the media. And what's happened is with the internet, with blogs, with cable news network, people have now begun to pick and choose what they want to hear. So what happens is, rather than hearing Walter Cronkite come over, you know, one of three channels every night at 6 o'clock to hear your news or read it in the local paper the next day, we can go online, we can turn on our cable news, and if I'm a progressive Democrat, I can put on Rachel Maddow, and Rachel Maddow will tell me exactly what I want to hear. If I'm a very conservative Republican, I can put on Sean Hannity. He will tell me exactly what I want to hear. And what's happened is the rhetoric has become sharper and sharper and sharper, to where we've created a hatefulness between Democrats and Republicans like I've never seen. I used to work for Orrin Hatch, and when I first went to work for Orrin, I walked into his office the first time, and sitting on his couch was Teddy Kennedy. And I almost passed out, because here's this icon sitting in front of me. We chatted for a minute. When Senator Kennedy left, I said, what was that all about? And he said, oh, he's one of my best friends. We work together on issues all the time. And this was 20-some years ago. People used to be friends across the aisle. in Sacramento when Willie Brown was speaker. Everybody was buddies. They all went out for dinner and wrote bills up on napkins in Chinese restaurants, and then they hung out together. Their wives hung out together. That's not the case anymore. That we've seen, and one of the reasons for this is sort of this division in the media and the segregation of the media, where people can pick and choose what they want to hear. So the rhetoric becomes sharper and sharper, so that I'm reaching those people that are listening to me. And we've seen, I'm not bashing the media. I think it's great that we have so many and such a constant way to receive information. The problem is people are tuning into the information they want to hear. If you go on Facebook, you can see what people truly believe are news outlets, which are basically commentary. Mm-hmm. You know, the Huffington Post is not a news outlet. Breitbart is not a news outlet. They're telling people what they want to hear, mm-hmm. and that's part of the problem.
So we're seeing a lot more fracturing in that media environment. I want to get back to that issue. But first, this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight, we're discussing the future of the California Republican Party. We have on the phone line Harmeet Dillon from the Republican National Committee, Jimmy Camp, former Director of Operations for the California Republican Party, and Marcos Molitzis, founder and publisher of Daily Kos. We'd love to have you call in with your questions or comments. The number to do that is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment on our website, kalw.org, or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. Marcos, I wanted to go back to you to that question about the media. What do you see as the role for the media going forward? And, you know, particularly many, not just on the left, but a number of people kind of observing Trump's campaign have been concerned about, you know, what they perceive to be autocratic type tendencies, and, you know, of course, one of the hallmarks of any autocrat, of course, is to try to really monopolize the media environment, get more propaganda out there. It seems to me that the media, you know, if all this does come to pass, the media is going to be even more important than ever. So what role do you see as the media playing going forward, given, you know, this really fractured state that we have right now?
Yeah, first of all, I'd just like to really quickly note that media in this country was formed from its inception, from the founding of our nation, as a partisan media, with newspapers supporting various factions and candidates. That's why you have papers that are called the Press Democrat, for example. So this idea that we had this unbiased notion, I mean, even the unbiased news outlets would refer to Steve Bannon as representing the alt-right. What's an alt-right? Well, why not call it what it is? White supremacist. Just by choosing what words you use, you show bias, even if you're trying to quote be unbiased. So what I prefer, we see in the United Kingdom, which is a press that is open and overt about its biases, that way people can interpret for themselves that the news within that filter, not pretend that it is, quote, unbiased. But, you know, moving into the future, I actually, there was this moment a couple of days after the election when Wolf Blitzer came in, talked about how Donald Trump was not going to allow the press to travel with him. There would be no traveling press corps. And he called it, he was unacceptable. He was outraged. And I had to laugh, right? Because we're talking about all the things Donald Trump said about women, about Latinos, about Muslims, that are African Americans. And this was the thing that finally broke his outrage meter. And I actually hope that Donald Trump squashes that press traveling press corps. I wish he got rid of press conferences, because then maybe at that point the press would start, at least the DC press would transition from being stenography, which is what they were for the Trump campaign, and maybe be a little more start doing the sort of in-depth exploration and vetting of Donald Trump that wasn't done during the campaign. I mean, we never saw his taxes. The press was obsessed with Hillary Clinton's emails, but not a single instance of actual legal wrongdoing was found. But Donald Trump's foundation, absent except for one reporter at the Washington Post, Fahrenthold, nobody touched the Trump Foundation when it was literally a cauldron of fraud and self-dealing and all sorts of matters. So I actually hope that the press story gets jolted into realizing that these elections don't need to be covered like it's a freaking video game or something like that, but realizing that there's real world repercussions, and maybe, just maybe, if you have a candidate that literally mimics the rhetoric that we've seen from historical despots and tyrannical dictators, that maybe they should be a little more careful about that coverage and take their job a little more seriously, because they sure as heck didn't do it during the campaign.
Well, this is a controversial statement. I mean, I think if he does end up, you know, cracking down on the media in that way, I think, you know, there's a much bigger losses there than just for the media establishment if that happens. So I think, you know, no matter your party affiliation, I'm sure we can all agree on the importance of the First Amendment.
That's why it's important for the media to access its checks on these candidates before, because none of this is a surprise. Mm-hmm. All of this he telegraphed ahead of time, and the media treated it as though it was a joke or not important or trivial, because they were more interested in playing the personality game as opposed to the issues game. And that's very clear, particularly on issues of press freedom, which again, this is not, none of this should be a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly an important topic that I think, you know, could be worth more discussion just by itself. We have an email from Shankar with a comment. Shankar says, I feel proud to live among an enlightened electorate in California, an electorate that has voted straight-line Democratic for over a decade. I will put California's policies and government up against any GOP-run state in the country. Look at the fiscal mess that Bobby Jindal, Sam Brownback, Pat McCrory, or Mike Pence have left their states, and compare them to California's fiscal position. Thank you for that comment, Shankar. And I want to pass it over to Harmeet Dhillon. First of all, Harmeet, you know, if you have any thoughts in response to that email, I'd be interested in them. And also want to hear what your plans are for the California GOP going forward to recapture some of those voters, some of those, you know, folks like Shankar who have those feelings.
Well, I mean, I hear Shankar's views, and you know, frankly, I don't know how enlightened it is when what we have here in California is actually driving voters, and specifically tax-paying voters, out of the state. So I think that's, those of us living in this cozy Bay Area bubble of, you know, $5 lattes and, you know, million-dollar homes in San Francisco have one worldview, and then the rest of the state has a different worldview outside LA and San Francisco. So I respectfully disagree with the writer and the listener. In terms of our message, like I said, we didn't get to where we were, and we didn't, you know, have this situation in the state where it is dominated by Democrats overnight, and we aren't going to get it back overnight either. But I will point out that decline to state voters are certainly the largest growing group here in the state, and so that's one of the areas where actually Republican candidates are, you know, really trying to make sure that we compete for those voters, and we are certainly investing at the state party in data and trying to make sure that we woo voters back and try to focus on issue-specific advocacy and use data to target voters, make sure we're trying to recruit candidates and run candidates who look like all of the different communities here in California. And so these are some of the things that we're doing at the state level. And frankly, you know, I think younger people may look at this and say, oh, you know, this is great, California's becoming more and more progressive, quote-unquote, but actually, what happens in politics and in life generally is things, you know, go to a certain extreme and then the pendulum swings back. We've seen that in California a few times over the years. I mean, California is the state of Ronald Reagan. California's, you know, been kind of a breeding ground for a lot of different movements and issues in America. And so I feel like when we hit the rock bottom and, you know, enough people have left the state and people are really tired of being overtaxed and having poor education, poor roads, poor quality of life, and no choice at the polls, I think we're going to start to see a change in that. And one final point is that one of the big things that I think attracted a lot of California Republicans to Donald Trump is his rhetoric about illegal immigration. It's important to emphasize the illegal part of that. Here in San Francisco, sanctuary city, down in LA, sanctuary city, every big city in California is a sanctuary city. And, you know, that disrespect for federal law and law and order is affecting the quality of life of citizens up and down the state. And if he were to just do one thing, which is cut off federal funding for cities that refuse to honor federal law, that would be a massive sea change in California politics that would come from Washington. I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying that if anything close to that happens, then we're going to see some very different discussions here in California about our idyllic lifestyles here in the cities.
So it sounds like your recipe for trying to win back the state's voters are basically to, you know, do some data research, wait for, you know, sort of people to come around. And it also, it sounds like a pretty, you know, hardline position on illegal immigration, you know, costing California, San Francisco about, I've seen estimates about $900 million, close to $1 billion in dollars in federal funding if those funds were withheld. So are there any specific policy changes you think that the California Republican Party needs to adopt to try to win over voters? Or is it more of this just sort of tactical and, you know, an investing in the data mechanics type approach.
Well, no, you skipped over a few things that I said, which include running, recruiting, mm-hmm. and funding candidates who look like the communities they come from. So, you know, in Southern California, we have Lingling Chang, who's running for the Senate this time. The votes are still being counted. We have Janet Nguyen down there. Mm-hmm. We have Michelle Steele, who's a supervisor and was a former Board of Equalization. Mm-hmm. You know, we have Vince Fong, who you know, just won the Assembly seat in Bakersfield. So we have a lot of Asian candidates who have, you know, succeeded in the party and are moving through the ranks. We have a significant number of Latino candidates as well who are winning races. And, you know, an undercovered area of our success here in the state is that a majority of the, you know, city councils, mayors, board of supervisors, that local level of government, are actually Republicans in this state, mm-hmm. more than Democrats. So even though Democrats dominate Sacramento, at the local level, Republicans are actually dominating this state. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we are taking over regional boards that affect billions of dollars of commerce. We are affecting, you know, a lot of those types of changes at the local level. That local level is the farm team for Assembly, mm-hmm. Senate, Congress, and constitutional offices here in California.
So,
should look for us to change in 2018. I think things are going to get better.
So more about the messengers than the message, it sounds like. Jimmy Camp, what's your recipe for how the Republican Party can try to rebuild itself here in California?
Well, and I don't think it's just the message. I don't think it's just mechanics. I think it's got to go way deeper. Like Harmeet mentioned, this has been a long process of the decline. I mean, in California, based on the exit polling, which I don't normally take stock in, but in the CNN exit poll, they actually nailed the Clinton-Trump percentage to the T, so I got to think that this is pretty close. But 76% of Latino voters voted for someone else besides Donald Trump. We had 83% of Asian voters voted for someone else besides Donald Trump. We had 91% of African-American voters voted for someone else besides Donald Trump. And that's a real problem there. One of the largest growing demographic in the state are Latino voters. And, you know, I'll speak anecdotally for a minute. You know, 22 years ago, I was sitting in a meeting discussing a U.S. Senate race in California, and it was sort of, okay, how do we win Latino voters over? We're going to have to win Latinos to win this race. How do we make Latinos feel like we care about them? And there was pontificating going on, and I raised my hand, kind of the junior guy in the room, and I said, well, what if we just cared about them? There's a big difference between saying, oh, we're going to get a surrogate that speaks Spanish and come and talk to you people. We're going to hire a field rep and come out and go to your city council meeting or your Hispanic Chamber of Commerce meeting. The Republican Party needs to dig very deep and realize that we need to not only say that we care about this community, we need to care about this community. And part of caring about that community is being a part of that community. And I don't see that happening. I see every couple of years, the Republican Party puts out a statement saying, you know, like in 2013, the so-called Republican autopsy report, we talk about mechanics and this and that, and how to reach out to, we need to reach out to Latinos and women and millennials. But I see it as mostly lip service. Until the Republican Party gets to a place where certain communities are comfortable with us. They're not comfortable with us right now. And I agree with Harmeet on the local level, this sort of backbench that's coming up. But the problem is on the national level, what they're seeing, and words matter. Now Donald Trump has said many things, many of them he has backed off on, but backing off on saying that we're going to ban all Muslims from coming into this country, when you say that, it leaves a mark. And when you say, well, I didn't really mean that, I'm just going to, there's still a mark. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I'm very concerned for the next 4 years that shaking the brand of the things Donald Trump has said is going to be very difficult. I think we're looking at a 20-year process where the Republican Party really needs to sit down and say, how do we become involved in this community? Mm-hmm. Do we hold job fairs and small business fairs in Latino communities where you can come and we will not stand there waving a big Republican flag, but having business people come in and say, here are things you can do to help your small business. Mm-hmm.
All right, so two different approaches there about rebuilding the party. Let's go to the phone lines. Bernie in San Francisco. Bernie, welcome to City Visions.
Yeah, hi. I grew up in Michigan, and one of my earliest memories is my parents taking me out on the campaign trail for Gerald Ford. And back then, the Republican Party, at least in the Midwest, was the party of good government, essentially being a control on government growth and its corresponding budgets. Since then, and it also fought so that people got good services for their tax dollar. Unfortunately, since then, it's become a mean-spirited party with mean-spirited policies. I have now been in San Francisco for 20 years and seen our city budget grow by almost five times. And I don't think our city services have improved. So at least on a local level, if the Republican Party could field candidates that could fight for some kind of growth on our budget and make sure that us citizens get a good return on our tax dollar, I would at least consider those candidates.
Mm-hmm. All right, so it sounds like there's an opening there. Marcos Melitzis, I'd like to turn this one over to you. What would be your recipe if you were, you know, not that you're going to be offered a job but to help the Republican Party strategize going forward, but what would be your thoughts or your recommendations for them in these closing minutes?
You know, this last caller actually had a great point. I mean, the modern Republican Party are political nihilists, and they're out to destroy government, and a lot of people, government can do a lot of good for people. And even if they don't believe it, it does do a lot of good, from education to transportation to our court system to our national defense, on so on and so forth. Government is important. But what I would do in California is, for one, I would stop trying to create an alternate reality. For some reason, California is immune to the Fox bubble. So talking about businesses leaving the state and people leaving the state, when actually population growth in California continues and it is the most successful business state in the country, sort of values that. How about not saying, earlier we heard that the protesters were hysterical overreaction, mm-hmm. I think was the term for the protesters. Mm-hmm. Now, these are people that are fighting for love and tolerance and understanding. Mm-hmm. They're not buying ammunition and guns. In record numbers.
So, Marcos,
people can love each other.
I think that's a great point to end on. We're out of time, unfortunately, but I think that's an important message to send across. So that's City Visions for this evening. My guests were Harmeet Dhillon, California Republican National Committee Woman, Jimmy Camp, former Director of Operations of the California Republican Party and political consultant, and Marcos Melitzis, founder and publisher of Daily Kos. I want to thank you all for joining me this evening. Our engineer this evening was David Latulip, and tonight's show was produced by Kendra Klang. Please join us next week for another episode of City Visions. And I want to have a special call out to you, our listeners. City Visions is proud to be celebrating its 25th anniversary on KALW. So on Monday, December 12th, we're going to look back at some of the defining moments in Bay Area history and culture over the last 25 years, and we want to hear from you. Which local people, events, and ideas have most influenced you in our region? How has the Bay Area changed in the last quarter century? So please send us your ideas for discussion for our December 12th show, and you can email those to cityvisions@kalw.org. That's cityvisions@kalw.org. We look forward to hearing from you. So this is Ethan Elkind. Thanks so much for listening. Good night. Go out and enjoy the supermoon and have a great week.